Beloved Bhagwan, a monk asked, are words and speech also mind? Hayakujo replied, words and speech are concurrent causes, they are not mind. The monk continued, what is this mind which lies beyond words and speech? There is no mind beyond words and speech, responded Hayakujo. The monk said, if there is no mind beyond words and speech, what is that mind in reality? Hayakujo said, mind is without form and characteristics. It is neither beyond nor not beyond words and speech. It is forever clear and still, and can perform its function freely and without hindrance. The patriarch said, it is only when the mind is seen to be unreal that the Dharma of all minds can be truly understood.
Manisha, language has never been used the way Zen uses it in a very symbolic, metaphoric, yet indicating to the ultimate reality. Its prose also is poetry. And while listening to these dialogues, you should not be listening only by the ears. Your empty heart is needed to receive them. Only then you have welcomed them, because they are not mere prose pieces. They are living hearts of great masters. A monk asked, are words and speech also mind? Hayakujo replied, words and speech are concurrent causes, they are not mind. Concurrent causes is a logical terminology. It means like the tracks of railway lines. The two rails run side by side for miles together, but they will never meet. They are so close, but the distance remains always the same. Because of the distance remaining the same, the meeting is impossible. They are concurrent causes. Mind and words and speech are concurrent causes. That is one of the most fundamental things about Zen. Nobody has said that before. People have always thought that mind means words, speech, thoughts, but that is not true. They are very close, concurrent, so close that you can get the conception that they are one. But when you get deeper into meditation and leave the world of words and speech, you suddenly find there is an empty mind beyond them, which is your real mind. To distinguish it, we call it empty heart. Either to call it no mind, real mind, empty heart, they are all synonymous. But ordinarily, you are so close to thinking, emotions, words, that you cannot conceive there is a sky beyond the clouds, that there is a full moon beyond the clouds. You will have to go beyond the clouds to see the moon. The monk continued, "What is this mind which lies beyond words and speech?" Now, anybody of some intelligence will not ask such a question. If anything lies beyond and speech, you cannot ask such a question. What is this mind which lies beyond words and speech? If it is beyond words and speech, how it can be answered? Hayakuju says, there is no mind beyond words and speech, responded Hayakuja. The monk said, if there is no mind beyond words and speech, what is that mind in reality? He does not get the idea of the beyond. Hayakuju said, mind is without form and characteristic. It is neither beyond nor beyond words and speech. It is forever clear and still and can perform its function freely and without hindrance. The patriarch said, it is only when the mind is seen to be unreal that the dharma of all minds can be truly understood. The whole dialogue is between two persons who cannot understand each other. The master, Hayakuju, is speaking as authentically as possible about something which cannot be spoken about. Anybody in his place, a man like Matazu, would have beaten the monk to give him a little glimpse beyond the mind. When thoughts stop, when suddenly one hits you, the whole world is in a whirling and thoughts stop and you are shocked. Even breathing stops, that I was asking a relevant question And what kind of mad master is he? He hits me. And before you have opened your mind, he hits you again. Once Matasu hit a person 66 times. Because he was hit, he will be sagged and still start opening his mouth. Again another hit, till he stopped opening his mouth, till he understood that this opening of the mouth is creating the whole trouble. But Matasu was a totally different master. Very loving and very compassionate. He has the right to hit. And as the man became silent, Matasu closed his eyes. The man closed his eyes. Nothing was asked. Nothing was said, and everything was understood. Those 66 hits brought the man to the edge of the mind. Must have been an authentic seeker, did not bother that his head may be getting broken, did not care, went on insisting for another hit till he found some glimpse that prevented him from his speaking. Seeing that he has found some glimpse and is not going to speak, Matasu closed his eyes. They sat for hours together in silence. In that silence is the transfer, the transmission. The man bowed down, touched the feet of Matasu, and he said, if there were more people like you, so compassionate to hit 66 times, the world would have become enlightened. But it is a totally different atmosphere where the hit was not thought to be an insult. It was thought to be a message. What words cannot say, the hit was saying. The hit was saying, keep quiet, be silent, be utterly silent. And the master goes on hitting. He is saying, go on digging deeper and deeper. As I hit you from outside, you hit yourself inside. Till you reach the life sources itself, how could you depend more on simple dialogue? His contribution is that he did not behave like a mad Zen master. He behaved very normally. He has brought from the mountains the Zen to the marketplace. Naturally, he has to behave according to the manners of the market. So the questions are all stupid. Each question needs a good hit to the answer what Hayakuju has replied that they are concurrent causes. They appear to be very close, but they are not one. They can go separate ways. There is nothing to hinder them. Mind can remain empty without thoughts, because thoughts are not part intrinsically of the mind. They come and go. You know, they go on coming and going. Your mind is simply a caravansaray in which they stay for a while. In your whole life, how many thoughts have passed in your mind? Exactly the same as the water has passed down the Ganges. Every mind is concurrent with a flowing river of thoughts. His answer is so clear that to ask him, what is this mind which lies beyond words and speech, is absolutely nonsense. He has said, it is not mind and there is no relationship between speech, words and mind. They are two separate phenomena running together at close distance but never meeting. Because it is beyond mind and beyond words and speech, a man of understanding would not have asked, what is this mind? Because any answer will be words and speech. This mind cannot be spoken. This mind can be felt. This mind can be experienced. If the man has asked, how to experience this mind, which is beyond words and speech, just that simple difference would have made a great difference. That would have proved that the man is really a man of genius. He understands that something that is beyond words and speech, you are not supposed to ask any question about it, what it is. Because you are forcing the other person to bring something which is beyond speech into speech, beyond words into words. But Hayakuju was very patient, had to be, because he is working in the marketplace, not in a Zen monastery, not amongst authentic seekers, but amongst casual inquirers. And one sometimes simply wonders and laughs. I have been touring this country for 30 years or more. I have found people. I am going to catch a train. The train stops only for 10 minutes and somebody is holding my hand and saying, just tell me, what is truth? I said, it will take a little time and I will miss my train. It is not something that I can give you right now. It will need a certain background within you, then only I can indicate to you what is truth. That cannot be done while my train is moving. Just let me go. I have found people on the streets. They will stop. They will say that we don't have much time to meditate, but you can just tell us in short, what is meditation? All over the world there are such people who are in a hurry and want the ultimate experience in their hurry, in their haste. This man did not understand what has been said. If he was even just a little intelligent, he would have stopped. His stopping may have given him a glimpse. But rather than stopping, he asked, what is this mind which is beyond words and speech? Hai kujo does not act the way he would have acted with his Zen seeker. This is just a curiosity monger. He answered him, there is no mind beyond words and speech. Responded Hayakuja, what he is saying, that beyond words and speech there is no mind. No mind is the empty mind. No mind is the empty heart. Nothing can be said about it more than this, that it is empty of what you call mind. The monk said, if there is no mind beyond words and speech, what is that mind in reality? Now he goes on being more and more stupid. Everything has been answered. If he is really in search, he will ask about how to get into this space you are talking about. What device? What method? But he is not asking about method or device. He is trying to counter the master by another question. If there is no mind beyond words and speech, what is that mind in reality? Hayakujo said, mind is without form and characteristics. It is neither beyond or not beyond words and speech, it is forever clear and still and can perform its function freely and without hindrance. The patriarch said, it is only when the mind is seen to be unreal that the dharma of all minds can be truly understood. It must have been beyond the questioner. But Hayakuju did whatever is possible through language. He said, don't ask about the reality of this mind. It is just a mirror that goes on reflecting all the attributes of existence. It is always clean, just you have never gone close to it. Hayakuju must have been in a great sadness seeing these people. I myself have talked to millions of people around the world. I used to talk to the crowds of 50,000 people or 100,000 people, and I knew that everything is going beyond their heads. They are just sitting there because to get out of the ocean of 1,000 people, 100,000 people, they will be beaten. That you are disturbing, sit down. I used to say to people that if anybody stands up, just pull him down. And people always enjoy such things. So they always waited that somebody must get up. Then it is a virtue to pull him down, hit one or two slaps. There was no other way. These people loved me not because they understood what I am saying, but just because the way I am saying. They loved my presence. But they were not seekers. They had just taken an opportunity. Soon I became tired. It was utterly useless because they listen from one ear and from the other ear it goes out. That is for men. For women, they listen with both the ears and everything goes out from their mouth. Just a little difference. Have you ever seen two women sitting silently together? The world is so full of gossiping. And you are talking about meditation. It is so juicy to gossip. What is happening in the neighborhood? As far as meditation, there is enough time. In the old age, or even by after death, silently lying down in your grave, you can meditate as much as you want. But right now, there is so much happening around. Somebody's wife has escaped. Somebody's husband is cheating his wife. Seeing the situation that it is almost futile to talk to the crowd, I started gathering few peoples. The only way was I dropped speaking in the crowds. I will go to a mountain and I will inform people that whoever wants to come to the mountain for 10 days or 7 days can come and be with me. Naturally, if somebody takes 10 days out of his work, he has some interest. It cannot be just curiosity. If he leaves his wife and children and job for 10 days, at least he shows a sign that he is not only curious, he really wants to know. That's how meditation camps begin. But soon I found that meditation camps begin creating trouble for me. In Rajasthan, in their assembly, they discussed that I should not be allowed into Rajasthan because I used to go to Mount Abu, which is in Rajasthan. In Gujarat, at that time, Morarji Desai was the chief minister. He himself proposed to the assembly that my coming to Gujarat should be prohibited because I used to go to Bhavnagar, to Rajkot, to Jamnagar, to Dwarka. And there were few very beautiful places, Nargol, for camps. Miles and miles of huge saru trees. Underneath them the sun never reaches, because on top they are so full of leaves, branches, and they grow very closely. And by the side of the sea, you can hear the sound of the sea waves and listen. Sitting not together but scattered in the forest, it became a trouble everywhere that my camps should be stopped. Now my camps were not doing any harm to anybody. And in my camps only people were coming who wanted to come. Seeing throughout the world, I have come to the conclusion there is no democracy anywhere. Everywhere there is talk about democracy, freedom of speech, but it is all talk. The moment you find a man who has something to say, you immediately start stopping him. Yes, there is freedom of gossiping, but there is no freedom to say the truth. You are free to lie as much as you can. Nobody will prevent. No government will ever bother about you. But if you start talking about truth, and even more dangerous is to give people a certain direction so they can move into their own realization, is very dangerous to all vested interests. I had to remain in Pune and dropped going anywhere. Whoever wants to come here can come. This is my way of finding out authentic seekers, not interested in mental gymnastics, but are really dying to know what are their life springs, from where they are coming, to where they are going. What is their reality? And they don't want any verbal answer. They want an experience. Hayakujo must have been very sad. I can say it out of my own experience. 30 years simply wasted, because out of those crowds which I tagged around the country, rarely anybody comes here. Naturally, they have not heard me. They have not felt me. They have not seen that something absolutely important is possible even in their life. Just a little sense of direction has to be given to them. Those who have been coming here in thousands from all over the world are a different category of people. They don't belong to the crowds. They are seekers and searchers, and they are ready to risk their reputation. Because people are afraid to come here just to save their reputation. To be even associated with me and they lose their social status. I am a dangerous man. They also become part of the great dangerousness. Nobody knows what is the danger. Somebody once in a while dares to come in and is shocked that why he missed for so many years. Even he may be living in Pune. He may be passing from the grey gate every day. But just to be associated is dangerous. Because these people in the Buddha auditorium don't belong to any religion, don't belong to any nation, don't belong to any stupid ideas of inequality. Here nobody is a man or a woman, nobody is rich or poor. Everybody is in the same boat, making every effort to reach to the other source. And the other source is not far away. It needs only a little meditativeness, a little silence. And we are touching the other shore every night. It has to be touched many times before you become acquainted with the new space, the new world. Because going to the other shore is not just going to the other shore. You will have to leave all that you are on this shore. Only the essential, vital life principle will go to the other shore. Slowly, slowly one learns. And slowly, slowly one gathers the eyes to see the beauty of the other soul. The tremendous splendor of which we are completely blind. And it is so close that it makes me sad. It has always made the people who have reached the other shore very sad. Sad about the people who don't even think of the other shore. Even in their dreams, they are dreaming stupid things. A haiku by Basu, the passing days and months are eternal travelers in time. The passing days and months are eternal travelers in time. Why he wrote this haiku? Anybody who knows nothing of Zen will not be able to find any meaning in it. But one who knows the context is the witness. This haiku is not saying anything about witness, but it is saying everything about witness. In fact, it is just like a mirror. Months and days and years are eternal travelers. They go on passing before us, but we are always here and now. We are not traveling. Our whole existence is here and now, always. It does not matter where your body is. The haiku has meaning only for a meditator. Everything passes on. It is a caravan of stars, of days, of months, of years, of seasons. But you simply remain here, silently watching the whole procession. This center that never moves is the center not only of you, but of whole existence. The whole existence is moving on this center. Knowing this, you settle. You have found your home. You relax. All desires disappear. All ambitions disappear. There is nowhere to go. And there is nothing to be achieved. Everything is as it should be. In the moment when you experience this, that everything is as it should be, you become a Buddha. This is what we call enlightenment. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, you won't break our hearts and return to your room, never to venture out again, will you? It is selfish of me, but I continue hoping that we can keep you with us, that Sardarji will keep laughing and Abir Bhava will keep screaming, that the sutras will be juicy enough and that the questions make it clear that we very much still need you here with us." Manisha, You are asking, you won't break our hearts. I will do. But not in the sense you mean. I will break your hearts in my presence. Your hearts are closed. Their doors have never been opened for centuries. So much dust has gathered. So many cobwebs. I am going to break all that so that you can find the emptiness of your heart. But your idea is totally different. You say you won't break our hearts and return to your room, never to venture out again, will you? Unfortunately, I cannot promise that. I would love to give you the promise, but you know, I am a contradictory man. So my promise does not make any sense. I can promise you anything. I will try my best to go on coming every day. And it is possible only now that such a promise even can be fulfilled. Because I don't think that the world is going to last more than 12 years. Seeing the stupidity of the politicians and the priests and the so-called leaders of the world, it seems to be absolutely certain that they will destroy this planet. They are bent upon it. Everything is being done with tremendous speed to destroy this planet. So perhaps 12 years are not too much. Avirbhava can wait on the gate. Sardar Gurdayal Singh can continue laughing. This time, if you get all right, if you all can understand something beyond life and death, then we will all go together. With Avirbhava and all. And it will be really a great fun. It is certain if there is any hell, we are going to. Avirbhava is screaming, sitting on the bonnet of my Rolls Royce. Sardarji can be sitting behind. Laughing, and the whole caravan can go and take over the hell. Because the devil has ruled enough, it needs immediate revolution and change. If we cannot change this world, we will change some world anyway. The devil became worried. Because one thing is certain, that God never created electricity. In no scripture of any religion, God is supposed to create electricity. Obviously, it is a creation of devil. So he gave us a signal that don't harass me, go the other way. He would love that our caravan enters heaven. But we are not interested in heaven. With all those dirty saints, old hippies, most of them naked, doing all kinds of distortions of the body. Somebody is standing on the head. And they all have become shrunk. Just skeletons. And they don't have anything else to do except play on the harp and sing Alleluia. My people cannot do that for eternity. And you will not find in heaven a Gautam Buddha, a Matazu, a Hayakujo, a Bertrand Russell, or a Jean-Paul Sartre, or Mozart, or Dostoevsky. You will not find a single genius, a single artist, a single mystic. They are all in the hell. And they have made hell so beautiful. And our people reaching there with joy and laughter, that is the only thing that is missing. And what is the point of going to heaven? The real work is in hell. To transform millions of people who have been forced there for eternity for small things. Bertrand Russell has written in his autobiography that I cannot understand the idea of Christianity that sinners will suffer for eternity in hell. How many sins you can do to deserve a punishment for eternity? Even if you do every moment, day and night, this sin and that sin, and what are the sins? Drinking a cup of tea, smoking a cigarette, falling in love with a dangerous woman. Very nice looking. But never go for the looks. The reality is always different. Great philosophers have been writing about appearance and reality. Russell says that I counted one day how many sins I have committed. And I also counted the sins that I wanted to commit, but opportunities did not allow me. On both, I can get at least 4.5 years of jail by the very strict judge. But eternity is too much. And they say God is compassionate. And all the great people of the world, creative in any direction, have been thrown in the hell. And stupid and idiot saints who don't know anything of creativity, who don't know anything of meditation, whose whole art is how to torture themselves and others, these people are there, all sick, psychologically mad, in heaven. I have always suspected that God must himself have changed his place to hell. Living with these idiots and not a one, strange people will drive anybody mad. You just think about the saints, what kinds of saints. One saint I saw who has not taken any other position than standing for 12 years. His legs have become elephant legs. His upper body has shrunken and become very small. And he is holding a bamboo and to keep him entertained, his disciples go on singing day and night around him. I was passing by the road, somebody told me that here is a great saint. So I went to see him. That man was torturing himself And people were enjoying his torture. I have seen saints dying with will. That means not to eat for 90 days. Then only by the 90 days you will be finished with all your flesh. You will remain just an skeleton. And they are worshipped by thousands of people. These skeletons, their only quality is that they can torture themselves. There are from different parts of the world, different varieties. Heaven must be a circus. Nobody who is sane can survive there. And the fence is so ancient that it is almost broken everywhere. I have never heard anybody trespassing the ancient fence from the side of hell to the side of heaven. Nobody wants to go to heaven just to see there. From the outside, from the broken fence, is enough. So much stupidity is happening there. All the descriptions of heaven are so rotten, so ugly. So don't be worried, Manisha. Most probably, the whole Buddha auditorium will shoot directly as a missile towards hell, just killing to each other, so nobody is left behind. And 12 years is not a long time. I can keep the promise. Now it is Anando's time. Little Albert's mother cannot bring herself to tell the little boy that his dog Lady has just been run over by a car and killed. When Albert comes home from school, she talks of other things for a few minutes, but finally she says, "Albert, listen, Lady has been run by over and killed by an automobile." "Ah," says the boy, and goes out to play whistling. At dinner, little Albert asks, "Hey, Mom, where is Lady?" "Darling," says his mother, "I told you this afternoon, Lady has been killed by a car." Suddenly Albert bursts into tears. But Albert, cries his mother, when I told you this afternoon, it did not seem to bother you. No, sniffs Albert, it did not, because I thought you said daddy. Pope the Pollock is giving high mass in St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome. The mass is coming to an end and the Pollock Pope is leading the procession out into St. Peter's Square to bless the crowd. Suddenly, as the cathedral clock strikes three, the big hand falls off the clock and sails through the air and lands on the Pope's head with a resounding crack. Pope the Pollock falls senseless to the ground and is rushed to hospital suffering from concussion. The next morning, throughout the world, anxious Catholics wait to buy their morning newspapers to find out the latest news. The Vatican News is first of the press and carries the banner headline, Pope's head X-rayed reveals nothing. Max Muldoon is walking in the Oregon hills when it begins to snow and he goes to a nearby ranch house for shelter. There he meets Ed, the rancher, his pretty young wife and her daughter. "You can stay here the night," says Ed. "But we have only got one bed, so we will have to sleep next to each other, head to toe. And I am warning you," continues Ed, "no funny business." Then he waves a big six-shooter at Max and puts it under his pillow and falls asleep. In the middle of the night, the daughter, who is lying next to Max, slides her hand up his leg and begins to fondle him. Max points nervously to where the gun is hidden under Ed's pillow. "Don't worry," whispers the daughter, "it is not loaded." And she pulls Max unto her. Later on, Ed's wife, who has been watching this, points at the gun and says softly, "It is not loaded." And then she climbs over on top of Max. Ed snores on peacefully. A few minutes later, the daughter slides her hand up Max's leg again. Max points at his prick and says, "It is not loaded." be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now collect all your consciousness and look inwards as deep as you can. Make the consciousness just like an arrow that goes to the target. The target is the center of your being. To be at the being, to the very center of your life. You are also at the very center of the universe. From this silence, from this nothingness, everything arises. All the flowers and all the stars and all the Buddhas to be at this center is to have reached to the last milestone of a long journey of thousands of lives. To be a Buddha is the end of the road. Finally, the Buddha jumps beyond himself and disappears into the universal energy, melts just like ice melts. The evening has been so beautiful, and your being silent, sitting like Buddhas, has made it a great splendor. To deepen the splendor, Nivedana, relax, just witnessing your body, your mind and everything. You are just a mirror and nothing else. Rejoice this silence. Rejoice this intensity of peace. Let your every fiber, every cell be filled with the life juice you have entered in. be completely soaked, drenched. So when you come back, you bring the Buddha with you. The Buddha has to be in your actions, in your words, in your silences, in your speech. Remember only one thing. You have been a Buddha forever. It is not something new, but only a new revelation. Nivedana, come back, but come back with the Buddha deep in your empty heart. Gracefully, silently, sit down. Just few moments of recollection. Remembering the path you have been, the space you entered, the tremendous experience of being a Buddha, the remembrance should go on echoing in you around the clock. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.